Campus FM presents Talking Eds, a program brought to you by students from the International Masters in Adult Education for Social Change, who are studying currently at the University of Malta.
Hello and welcome to Talking Eds. I'm Lidiane Caestro, your host for today's session. In this program, we are going to discuss feminism and gender issues. For our panel today, we welcome Ola Pavluk from the Talking Eds team, who has experience working with women's organizations and women's groups in Scotland.
Hello.
Dr. Josene Kutayar has a Master in Sociology of Education and Contemporary European Studies, as well as a PhD in Sociology and Equity Studies in Education. Currently, she's a lecturer at the Department of Gender Studies of the University of Malta, with solid working experience supervising undergraduate and postgraduate students, teaching about feminist community research and promoting education in formal and informal ways. Welcome.
Thank you.
Andrea Kalos is an executive policy and training at the National Commission for the Promotion of Equality, NCPE. He delivers training sessions on topics such as the Maltese Equality Law, gender mainstreaming, diversity management, and addressing sexual harassment. He also reviews drafts of national policies, providing input on equality perspective. Welcome.
Thanks for the invitation.
Andre, which are the biggest issues and what Malta has been doing for women's rights and gender equality?
Okay, I think when it comes to the biggest issues Malta is facing, linked to gender equality, I think they are quite similar to what most other countries in the world are facing, actually. And there are a range of issues. We can talk about, for example, violence against women, sexual harassment, discrimination at the workplace and in other spheres of life. And then we also see various imbalances. For example, when it comes to the participation of women and men in decision making, it could be economic decision making, political decision making. So there are a number of imbalances in the labor market, participation in the labor market. I mean, these are all reflections of inequality. We have to acknowledge that inequality exists. And that's by acknowledging that inequality exists, it's the starting point for addressing it. Well, it is being addressed in many ways. For example, 2.5 years ago, childcare services were introduced. That is, working parents in Malta, they have the opportunity to send their children to free childcare, and which is free of charge. And of course, this has incentivized the participation of women in the labor market, as well as a number of other measures. For example, right now, it's expected that a bill is going to be presented in Parliament on gender-based violence and domestic violence, which would put Malta in line with the Istanbul Convention. And there are also a number of other measures. So, I mean, there is progress being done, but of course, inequality is still there, and we have to acknowledge that and make our best efforts to address it.
You have mentioned the labor market. So how Malta has progressed in relation to the labor market participation and the gender pay gap?
Mm-hmm.
And where would it be located within the countries in the European Union?
When it comes to the labor market participation, we're nearing the end. When it comes to the gender pay gap, we have a better, less gender pay gap in comparison with other EU countries. We don't know what would happen, though, if the civil service reduces the number of workers, because the government of Malta has a high percentage of people, and it employs a higher percentage of people, and it's more family-friendly than the private sector. Yeah. So that's why the gender pay gap isn't that high. But the issue is we're encouraging more women in the labor market because at the moment, it's not just because of EU issues, because at the moment we need more workers. So we're not trying to liberate the non-employed workers. At the same time, we're not really rendering the labor market more family-friendly. either for men or for women. We have one of the highest per week working hours. We work around 40 hours per week. But if you look at it, men work, especially married men, work 4 to 1.5 hours per week. The highest is Greece. It has the highest working hour per week, which is 45. But we're not that far behind them. So if you really want the two parents to work, you need to reduce the working week. This is my agenda for the future. We want people to have children and we want them to work. But we're not facilitating access to both. Okay, we have the childcare facilities, but at the end of the day, I think everybody wants to have time, some good time, not when you're tired, to spend with your children.
Yeah, I think when it comes to the labor market, the situation is quite complex because you can look at different figures which actually show different aspects of the situation of the participation within the labor market. In the past 3 years, there has been around a 6 percentage point increase of female participation in the labor market. So that's, I mean, I think
there was a push. I think there was a push by government legislation.
Yeah, exactly. To increase that. But then also what we see is segregation in the labor market. So, for example, the 30% of all employed women work in services and sales.
But that's, I think we had one of the least segregated labor markets in Europe.
But it's increasing. It's increasing. Segregation is increasing because the, in fact, the gender pay gap is also increasing. Although it is still below the EU average, gender pay gap is increasing and that indicates an increase of the segregation within the labor market.
The way it was being worked out, the way it looked very nice.
The way it was being worked out made it look like there was this
5% only
sudden increase, and now these figures were revised. I mean, it wasn't this sudden increase. Mm-hmm. Actually, it had been, I mean, higher than we thought for quite some years, but still there is an increase. And what this increase indicates is that although more women are participating in the labor market, however, they are still being concentrated in mostly low-paid jobs. And it's something that we must take into account when we see the labor market figure.
Low-paid jobs, because usually women have their primary job is a part-time job. So, of course, we're going to see a lot
but
of women.
But that wouldn't affect the gender pay gap.
No, because then you have to take into consideration how much the job pays. Like, for example, if you look at the overall scenario, men are more concentrated in what we call elementary occupations, where the jobs are paid lower. And women are more likely to be concentrated in middle-paying occupations, and then there's a huge gap, and
exactly,
men at the top.
That's what I meant. Jobs, when I'm talking about low-paid jobs, I'm taking the
overall salary
women as a group and men as a group and compare, because that's the only reason how you can explain, together perhaps with some other factor, but that's the main factor that explains an increase in the gender pay gap, when you are actually having an increase of participation in work, but the gender pay gap increases. And it actually makes sense, the fact that these two things have the same time, because when more women start joining the labor market, they tend to go into not the, I mean, higher paid jobs, but into the middle or lower paid jobs.
Can I correct you on that? From a graduate research study which was conducted by the university quite a little bit time ago, because we don't have one every year, it was found that when graduates try to enter the labor market, women are more likely to take the first job that is offered. Mm-hmm. Men are more likely to suffer unemployment, but they will wait until the right job comes up, and then they will be allowed to negotiate both the pay and the working conditions, while the women aren't given this option. Mm-hmm. So I think we need to create a more assertive group of women. So that's one of the issues. But at the same time, we are also seeing that women who continue tertiary education are more likely to remain within the labor market, while in the past, women who had children would withdraw for some time and come back. Mm-hmm. So let's see what's going to happen in the future, because when you speak about re-entry, this is about women who have left, the withdrawn from the labor market, and if they had any skills, they lost them.
Yeah.
So when they came in, they didn't have any negotiating which they could do because their skills were obsolete. But I think the people for the future, in the future, will never leave the labor market if the economy is going to be stable. You're saying this increase of women in the labor market because the economy demands more workers, and we're getting either the inactive labor force or bringing people from outside. So what's going to happen if there is an economic slump? Are we going to see what was happening in Europe, where women had to remain in the labor market because we had a service economy? Men remained at home because they couldn't find employment, but then it didn't mean that the men took over the caring responsibilities, which women would have cared for.
It's actually an interesting point you said about the wages and the differences in how men sometimes have better opportunities for negotiating their wages. It's a very similar situation in Poland, where most of the jobs are advertised without the actual salaries being listed, and they're just always kept secret. Nobody knows how much people earn as part of our culture, in a sense, and it is quite common for people to negotiate their salaries during interviews. As a result, often men have higher salaries, not necessarily because women are not assertive, but also because when women are assertive, they're often perceived as being aggressive, and they actually are not getting the wages they're asked for. It's a very common problem in Poland at the moment.
Ola, since you mentioned Poland, I would ask you, from your perspective, coming from Poland, how would you describe the women's rights movement there and the issues that you're facing nowadays?
Yes, that's a good question. At the moment, I would say that the women's rights movement is very fragmented. Poland is a very Catholic and rather conservative society, and that is a cause of fragmentation. I would say that the movement, if it doesn't really exist as one movement, but you could say that there's a lot of different non-governmental organizations and women's groups who try to tackle some issues. Some issues are more in line with Catholic values as perceived at the moment, and some are less. And that kind of divides the actual, as you may say, struggle or the fight. At the moment, on the table, there is a big issue of reproductive rights and abortion. And that creates a big divide within community. We have had a lot of protests and marches. Poland, similarly to Malta, has one of the most restrictive abortion rights in Europe. And this discussion that was on the table. Also, apart from that, we have a big discussion on domestic violence. It is really big. In 2015, Poland has ratified the convention, the Istanbul Convention, but that was, again, very controversial. Again, one of the reasons why it was controversial was because it was seen that the discussion about gender and social aspects of gender was against Catholic values and traditional values, family values. It feels like as if in Poland people are not perhaps ready to talk about gender at all. It is a very divisive topic, and this is definitely on the table right now when it comes to women's movement, just trying to bring this conversation, because what is happening is that if we are not able to talk about gender and the social aspects of gender roles, then we cannot tackle discrimination. And this is why the domestic violence is still a controversial topic.
Okay, we will take a quick break now and be back after the song. You don't own me. You don't own me.
Well, let's go. But I'm Gerald. Yeah. And I can always have just what I want. She's the baddest, I would love to flaunt. Take her shopping, you know, Yves Saint Laurent. But nope, she ain't with it though. All because she got her own though. Boss, if you don't know, she could never ever be a broke hoe.
You don't own me. I'm not just one of your many toys. You don't own me. Don't say I can't go with other boys. Thank you.
Welcome back to Talking Ads. Today we have our guest here, Ola Pavlok, Jozan Kutayar, and Andre Kalis, sharing their knowledge and experience in relation to gender issues and feminism. So before the break, we have been talking about the situation in Poland. How would you compare to Malta the issues related to gender and feminism?
I'm not going to speak about feminism, but what was interesting is that during the communist era, a lot of women were, like the majority of women, worked in the workplace. As soon as communism fell, there was a push to put women back into their homes. So we're going the other way around now. We're pushing women outside into the workplace. And some of the women are not liking it because it's not a choice anymore. If you do not work, you're considered as a waste of space. And before, women would say, I'm a stay-at-home mom, and be proud about it. Nowadays, if you say, I'm a stay-at-home mom, you have to apologize. And you have to bring up a reason. So it's very interesting. What is providing this push? We spoke about EU directives. I think more than the EU directives, it's the economic issue in Malta. We need more workers. What I'm afraid of is what's happening when the economy slumps. Will we push women back into their homes and find some kind of... And we also have feminisms, not one feminism, because some women want the whole hog. Others would say, oh, I want just the right to work or something like that. So how many feminisms?
I think, of course, the economic issue probably is the strongest push in this regard. I mean, to have women in the labor market because it's good for the economy. But of course, we believe that, I mean, the effects of that are actually positive if done in the right way, because then if you still have segregation in the labor market, or if the conditions women are facing when at work are not the ones that should be, then that's still a problem there, and that's still, it's an issue of gender equality. There have been other movements in Malta that were not strictly concerned with the economic issue. For example, last year there was quite, I would say, a strong movement for the licensing of the morning after pill, which until last year, the morning after pill in Malta was not allowed. And there was a movement, a women's rights movement composed of different groups, and also the Commission for Equality had taken a stand in favor of licensing the morning after pill, which eventually it was licensed. So yeah, I think there are other things happening in Malta, also at a grassroots level, I would say. So yeah, it's a varied
movement. Speaking about women as if it's one category, but there are different women, like women from ethnic minorities or from other religions or from other races. How is the Maltese community regarding the issues which come from these, like FGM issues? We need to speak about it, since we have a proportion of people who come from an African background. Should we legalize against FGM, or shouldn't
there is a law against FGM now that specifically criminalizes FGM. It was introduced about 2 or 3 years ago, if I recall well. Whether that's working in practice,
implemented,
we don't know.
That's
exactly,
another
because
issue.
Implementation actually is the most challenging issue when it comes to FGM, and it's highly complex issue.
Before the show started, we're speaking about that there are two entities which regards equality, the CPRD and the NCPE. But even disabled women, there are less disabled women than disabled men in the labor market. So even there is a discrimination.
Intersectionality issues, I mean, one has to be always very attentive to that. And if we refer to the law, to the current law, it does not make any reference to intersectional issue. This should change if a new law, which is currently being discussed by Parliament, is actually enacted. which actually makes a specific reference to multiple discrimination and intersectional issues.
Yeah, it's interesting that you commented about intersectionality. In academic discourses, there are a lot of talks about how intersectionality is important. So, Ola, during your working experience, did you notice any patterns of how class, color, ethnic background affect engagement?
When I have worked in Scotland, I have worked mostly with women's groups, which mostly had women from minority ethnic background. So this aspect of intersectionality between race, ethnicity, religion, and gender was really, really prominent. However, when it comes to other aspects such as sexuality, orientation, and disability, this is not really, the intersectional lens is not used so much. In fact, it's not, it is in a sense being pushed away by groups because it again is seen as not a priority, or perhaps even if we were to bring in gender into the discussion or sexuality, there is certain belief that this would alienate people because of their religious beliefs or because of their cultural background. So when I have worked at the Equality Council in Scotland, this is still an issue for Equality Council to bring in sexuality and gender on the table when working with minority ethnic groups specifically. And with engagement, I would say that if you do not have discussions about intersectionality with relation to things like disability or sexuality, then these will be the people who will not be attending. So, for example, with disability not being discussed or taken into account as much as it should be, it's the actual office where we've worked was on the second floor with no lift. I mean, these are, if you don't bring these discussions to the table, you know, then you don't create safe spaces. You don't create accessible spaces, and that's a big issue, even in Scotland at the moment. Yeah.
Thank you. And I would also like to ask a question related to media in Malta. Media influences what we learn and how we read the world. With that in mind, what are the representation issues that are found in the portrayal of women in Maltese media?
I don't watch that many television. A lot of research has been conducted that when political parties promote women in the media, they are more likely to be elected, and they're more likely to be, the electorate is more likely to vote for them because it's like endorsing these women. What are our political parties doing to give more women visibility vis-a-vis the media? Some people will tell you that when there are these debate groups on television, they send men as talking heads to represent certain issues, but they will only send women when it comes to feminine, women's issue. So it's like always relegating women to certain sectors, education, perhaps health, but when it comes to the economy, you only find men. Politics, only men. So I think the political parties also need to clean their act. And if the prime minister goes somewhere, he should have a man and a woman sitting next to him, not only surrounded by a lot of men in grey or black suits. It will give more colour, especially if somebody like Angela Merkel was always changing her colour so that she really, like, you can see her when in a photo with a lot of men.
And that's also because political parties have a lot of influence on Maltese media. So actually a lot of things we get on the media of the images are actually produced by the parties themselves and influenced by the parties. In general, I would say there are still a lot of stereotypes in the media. I mean, still linked to the traditional gender roles of men going out to work or taking decisions, while women, but in adverts, for example. However, I think even worse than that right now is, and what's actually not improving at all, actually, the other way around, is the sexualization of women and girls in the media. And that's really pervasive, and you can see that everywhere, where the impression, the image you get is that the value of women and girls is based on their sexual appeal, And that's something I think that Maltese media is being increasingly portraying that kind of image.
What's interesting is that the media is helping push women into politics. We have a number of MPs and MEPs who entered politics because they had visibility in these reality TVs and talk shows, like Miriam Dalli, Claudette Buttigieg. They spearheaded into politics because of that. Because in Malta, the politicians tend to be either lawyers or other people with a profession where you have a lot of clients. So I think the media is changing the platform of how you can enter politics, which is good as well. So it's not just something bad.
No, of course. I mean, when you look at the media, there are certainly positive cases, and I believe that the media can be an agent of change, and there are spaces within the media. It's not to just one thing, the media. Mm-hmm. There are different stations, different programs, different
for everything.
Newspapers.
There's the good
exactly.
And the bad.
Yeah.
Because we have the highest rate of female MEPs in Europe. So,
But my general impression is that, for example, from journalists or TV presenters, the level of awareness on gender issues is still quite low. It might not be. I mean, I'm sure it's not intentional. I mean, that they are against gender equality. But the level of awareness, I would say, in general, as a whole, is still quite low. When they are talking or they are outlining issues that have to do with gender equality, I think you can understand that it's not being fully understood by people.
But I think they have this idea that gender equals women, when gender doesn't mean equals women. It means men, women, and whatever sex the governments include. Mm-hmm. We have the X now.
Yeah, it has been an interesting conversation here today. Thank you for your participation, for accepting our invitation to come here. But that's where we're going to have to say goodbye. So thank you to our team member, Ola Pavlak, and our special guests, Josen Kutayar and Andre Kalus. Thank you for sharing your thoughts and experience with us today. And thank you also to our technician, Samuel. And the Talking Ed series is available online at maltauniversitybroadcasting.com. Thank you for listening and goodbye.